Thank you for listening to this episode of Courtside Indiana Podcast. Please hit the subscribe or add button on your podcast app to get them delivered straight to your phone, tablet, or desktop. As always, we'd appreciate a rating and review, and you can reach us directly on our Courtside Indiana Twitter at CourtsideIND. Welcome to Courtside Indiana Podcast. This is Jim Reamer. It's lost count. Episode 186, something like that. Somewhere in the neighborhood. It's just the two of us. Dominic Neely joining me. Zach is on his spring hiatus. He'll be back after the Run and Slam to talk a little bit about games he sees there. I think most of us will be at Run and Slam, if not all of us.
Should be, yeah.
Yeah. You're in Fort Wayne. Zach's taking that weekend to go watch games. Zach will be neck deep in girls soccer from now until really the end of July. Dominique, you didn't start till like late August last year. It was me trying to find a partner almost every week last week or last year at this time, and it was fine. It was, I think I did one solo. I can't remember, but it was fine. It's just Zach doesn't go to as many games in the spring, and that's fine. Your kids probably aren't old enough to do that yet, are they?
Well, 2 weeks, my son's going to be playing soccer, but that's just like every Saturday for like an hour for like 6 weeks. So nothing where we're traveling or anything like that at 3 years old, but no, nothing too crazy.
Yeah, I think I don't know how old his daughter is, but she's getting into that age where having technology problems. I'm just glad I got enough bandwidth right now to record this podcast. So it's Sunday night, struggling over here right now.
Four cats. Jeez.
Yeah, we've got. Yeah, I'm housing two extra cats for a month, and only a month. It's chaos and bedlam over here. Thank God I've got enough room, and literally enough rooms. So I got two cats quarantined in a. I'm becoming cat lady. This is not good. I won't promise extra TikToks on the cats. So. That's what made me think of the two of us song. Do you watch TikTok? Do you play around with that app at all?
I don't. My wife does a little bit, and then she deletes it for like a week, and then I don't dabble in that at all. TikTok.
All social media is what you make of it. It's just the way it is. The algorithms. You choose whatever you want. My Twitter feed is everybody I follow, and I guess people, they retweet. And my TikTok are my interests. So it's mostly pets, cooking, DIY. And now the one sweeping, going viral is this guy that does different versions of Low. The song Low to different tunes. So to the windows, to the walls, blah, 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 you know, to different tunes, and it's outstanding. He's very good at it. He's an older guy. He's probably my age. So it's not, you know, some kid. It's, you know, he's got it figured out, and he's raking off of it because I'm sure he's making money.
That's where your tweet came from.
It is exactly where it came from. No doubt about it. And, so the first one he did was just to the tune, just the two of us. And it's from the windows to the walls till the. So anyway, I'm not going to say it. It's a good song. It reminds me of a date night. I had in Fort Wayne once.
Oh, geez.
I'm not going to get into that detail.
Going off the rails early.
What was it called? The Thirsty Camel?
In Fort Wayne,
it's been a minute. I mean, I don't think it's around anymore, but I don't even remember how that came about, to be honest.
It's permanently closed. You might have closed it down.
We might have closed it down. I know it was a place that a certain former player had frequented not from Fort Wayne, but who spent a lot of time in Fort Wayne, and he was making lots of fun of me for being there. But
all the Fort Wayne bars you go to get closed down, man.
I know. So leave me out of it. Arena's good.
Yeah.
And there is a place south of Coliseum. It's really good food. When you get to this age and you're single, that's what you find good places you can hang out that have TVs and good food. That's just how it goes. And in my case, I've got friends here that in Carmel that know very little about my basketball. That's what we do. I got my basketball people. I got my people.
Nice.
I can't access my database right now, so we have no recruiting news. Anything that we remember that was monumental?
Nothing that's coming to mind.
And this will be the week with the first open period. This will be the week where new offers start popping.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm surprised we haven't seen any come across. I can't even get those emails. My server's screwed up right now. So
is next week a weekend live period as well?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought.
Yeah. The Run and Slam is not a live period.
Right.
But this weekend is. We'll be here in Indy. I'll be here in Indy.
What's going on there?
The Hoop Group.
Hoop Group, okay.
Yeah.
Kyle Guy a part of that?
Yeah, I mean, part of it. The teams are, yeah.
Yeah.
Very, very well received this weekend. I was glad to hear they took a chance and went that direction instead of NY2LA. And early returns are they were happy. I don't know that it was better or worse, but they are pleased with what was out there in Pitt.
Where was that one at? Pitt, okay. Pittsburgh. Fest. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I stayed here in Indy and watched the NY2LA stuff, and it was good. It was good. It's bigger, and sometimes that means it gets a little watered down. I think the formula is to keep your better teams grouped together, let them bang it out, and adjust accordingly when it comes to your finals. Then have a little bit more spread out. But, look, everybody, it's fluid. There's two or three really good independent leagues that have popped up here in the last few years, and they're all trying to figure out their formula. And last year, NY2LA merged or joined together, partnered with the Hoop Scene out of the South. And I thought it went well, but they didn't do it again this year. And I know NY2LA, seven of the final eight teams were NY2LA teams. We were one of them. Three of the final four teams were NY2LA teams. We also were one of them. That didn't include the George Hills group. They got upset. And then the team that beat them beat us. But still, I don't know, they just decided not to do it again this year. The only team that advanced from the Hoop Scene group was the Atlanta All-Stars, and that was a nice group. We played them in league play. But that was last year. This year, they're not doing it together. So we'll talk a little bit about some of the games we saw this week. You watched a lot of EYBL streams.
Yeah, I just watched the Indy Heat. I watched the 17s, and then I watched the 15s. I watched about three of the 15s games, and then the 17s, I watched three full games, and then caught Friday night. I had to bounce on their first game a little bit. I watched a little bit, but then had to leave. So
I've got some evaluations from the NY2LA stuff this past weekend. Nothing stood out as big as it did the first week, but the first week was just saw some new kids. This week I got a chance to see a lot of guys that I've seen during the year and kind of knew that last week. So last week it was me trying to find teams that I wouldn't be watching this week. And likewise, I skipped a couple teams last week that I knew I'd be watching next week. I'm not even sure I've seen our I have seen one of our one of the Kyle Guy teams. I've not seen everybody play yet. I plan on seeing them next week. So, well, but the All-Star, or I'm sorry, Mr. Basketball came out. No surprises, really. I mean, Marcus Burton kind of ran away with it.
Landslide, yep.
It was a landslide, and he got 171 votes. And I think we're going to talk about vote totals, right? Maybe not right this second, but here pretty soon. He got 171 votes. Booker got 20. Zane Doughty. Who the hell's Shane? Got six for third, tied, or he got third place. Joey Hart, Miles Colvin each have five votes, tied for fourth, and in sixth place, sixth of the six finalists, Mason Jones had three. 10 other players got votes. We do know that. We don't know the full slate of who got votes. But only two of those 10 got multiple votes. That was Logan Imes got two votes. I can imagine who those two were. Probably JR and Jimmy Howe. Maybe. But that's part of what we're going to talk about. And then Luke Almodovar at Noblesville also got two votes, and we can probably guess who voted for him. Probably his school coach and his grandfather, who was a 1965 Mr. Basketball, Billy Keller. But that goes to the conversation we had before we hit record. There were only 220 votes cast for Mr. Basketball. The voting link, as to my knowledge, goes to all 400 and whatever high school coaches there are. So right away, we know that no more than half of coaches voted. But you also consider that it also went to media, of which I received a vote, which I appreciate. I mean, you can imagine how many different media outlets are there that get a vote. What are we projecting there? Another 100, maybe?
Think that many of them?
I mean, if you count newspapers/website, if you count, I would be surprised if I'm the only, or if we're the only pure internet site that gets a vote. I would have to imagine like Rab Johns gets a vote, or Trevor, Ramsey, maybe. I haven't
asked. Find out pretty quick.
I guess we could, couldn't we? But then you got to consider newspapers. I mean, how many newspapers do we think we follow that?
Elkhart Truth, maybe.
Elkhart Truth, Terre Haute. I mean, and there's a lot that we don't follow, a lot that I don't follow. I think I follow the big ones, the one that cover like regional areas. And then I do believe that past winners get a chance to vote as well.
Okay, so, I know you mentioned Almodovar, as you said, his grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, because I was going to ask you about that is why he would be getting a vote, but I guess that makes sense if it's – but then, if you add all those numbers up and there's only 200 and some votes, I mean, a lot of people are not voting or
– there's a lot of people that don't vote.
It just seems – yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people don't vote. It's clear. And that's unfortunate. I'll tell you this. So I send out, as you know, every week we send out an email to the high school coaches that for player of the week, right? And I would say I start out with 400 and change, just over 400 that go out to start the year. Automatically 30 to 40 of them bounce back and quote unsubscribe because they either have a server at school that blocks that can detect that it's a group, that it's a bulk email, and will block it. Some servers are a little bit more lenient than others. Sometimes I have a wrong email address. I don't have all of, I don't necessarily have all of the email addresses right away. I've got a little bit of a guessing game that I play, based on handles of their athletics director or previous coaches. So if I don't know the person, I kind of guess on what their email address is, and I'm right maybe half the time because I get some that bounce back that just are wrong email addresses. So then I try to go through and correct what's wrong. But I guess my point is that I probably starting out, there's about 350, 360 that go out. The first week or two, about 75% of the coaches who get that email actually look at it, and it can tell. By the end of the
Right.
year, it's close to 50. But then there's also time, I mean, there's also times too where a lot of these guys will, I'll have an email Sunday night from a coach nominating a player, and I haven't even sent the email out yet. So it goes both ways. So, you know, the interest, or they're looking at emails and being involved, it does dwindle down a little bit. And I like in our player of the week stuff that we have new coaches that come in and out every week. It's not always the same group. Some of it's the same. You know, and there's that absolutely nothing wrong with that. Coaches should do it. In fact, I'm afraid that if more coaches do it, it just becomes way more work. So it's a nice mix. I'm trying to automate it. I'm trying to automate the output, not just the input.
Right.
But
I'll say, I mean, Mr. Basketball is a big enough deal where you think more people would vote. Or like I've said in the past, do we have the wrong people voting?
well, it's hard to say we
But
had the wrong people voting when it's high school. I don't know how you can just exclude people. I mean, when you consider that, what, only half the people vote in presidential elections, it's about par for the course.
yeah, I guess that's true. It just seems like,
That
I
seems a little
don't
more important than Mr. Basketball.
know. Maybe. But no, it seems like, yeah, I mean,
Fair. That's fair.
what you have to put your top, was it top 10 on there or something? On the ballot, you know, your top guys in Mr. Basketball and
The
then.
ballot is all electronic at this point. Basically, you nominate 10 players for the All-Star team, and your first one, you literally give them a numerical value. So there's one, there's two, all the way down to 10, and your first one is your Mr. Basketball vote.
Right.
You know, however many people, who, you know, how many people even pay attention to that? I don't know. I will say that a number was given to me that usually there's 30 to 35 girls every year that get a Miss Basketball vote. It said girls get, there's more girls every year that gets vote that get votes than boys. So it goes to your point that not everybody maybe deserves a vote.
Well, yeah, it's just like, you know, coaches, they, I mean, they
Have we
look at
discussed
their,
that on the have we discussed that we were recording yet?
yeah, I think we have a little
Did we?
bit,
Okay,
but
did we touch on that last week?
I think so. But
Okay.
I was going to
I
say
don't I
the,
didn't mean to out you.
no, I was going to say the coaches, you know, what, I don't know the percentage, but a good number of them probably just, you know, rightfully so focus on their schedule, right? I mean, who they're playing and, you
No,
know,
yeah,
probably
no
not
question.
getting out to other just random games and seeing kids. So it's like, you know, unless they're have knowledge or care to look at other parts of the state or other top players and things like that, you know, it's, I don't know, it's probably hard to put 10 guys on a list for some of them, potentially. So I don't know.
And I think that's limiting because you're talking about a very few people that go around and watch games all over. That, I mean, I think we tried to do this a couple weeks ago, right? Where we talked about, you know, nuts like me that just go to 90 to 100 games a year, you know, you're looking at that. There's a small list of people that do that.
Right.
Now, if you throw in streaming, that list gets a little bit broader and you're on that list.
Yeah.
And probably the reason why you don't go to as many games as I do is because you get kids.
Well, yeah, that's definitely the 100% the only
You
reason.
know, but I would say too that, you know, there's a friend of mine that I used to coach with that is coached at the high school level for years up in the Lafayette area, Sean Martin. He goes to a number of games. I would venture to guess that he definitely goes to enough that he should get a vote if, you know, we go down that route. Because your point is warranted, and we've talked about this in different contexts where, you know, a lot of these guys just see the teams they play or the teams that play the teams they play. You know, the games they see when they're scouting. But that's the same argument that's had when it comes to things like the college level, All-American teams, Heisman Trophy winner. You know, how many of these people who vote get a good sample size of all the candidates?
I'd say it's a little bit more accessible at that level, though,
It
having.
is because they're national, you know, most of those games are at least televised, if not nationally or regionally.
You can go back and see a lot of that stuff too, where high school is, you can probably is, you know, through Huddle and things like that. But it's a little bit easier, I think, for on the college scene there, Heisman or All-Americans to be able to go back and see guys.
But that is why the All-Star team is a nomination and not a vote, not a pure vote. But again, I thought we nailed the locks
Oh yeah.
pretty good, pretty
Yeah.
good. So I mean, it's not like it was too far off. It wasn't too far off that, you know, stuff that we thought from the All-Star team perspective.
Right.
I'd like to
Ramsey does
see.
not have a vote, by the way.
Really, he would get, if he asked for it, he would get one.
Yeah.
If he asked for it, he would get one. I randomly got one 15 years ago. 15? No, shoot, it's 20 years ago now. I forgot when I started a website. It was 2004. So 19 years ago, if you want to be exact.
When you start a website.
Who's your hoops report?
Okay.
But you know, it's he would get one if he asked for it.
Yeah, he should have one.
He should have one. Trevor should have one. Although Trevor's more focused now, or more. And more focused on the IU side.
IU recruits too.
Yeah, which makes sense. That's just not a direction I'd ever choose to go. I don't know. I don't care about watching kids in other places, I guess. I'd be a snob that way. But I would say that Mr. Basketball vote. I voted for Dowdy. Like we've talked about that.
Not on the air, I don't think.
Not on air.
Don't think so.
I voted for Zane. Wasn't for any compelling reason other than probably had a little local bias to it, but that's the conversation we've had before where every voter has their own biases that they bring to the situation, but the process itself is objective. So each voter is subjective, but the process is objective. It's no different than voting for any other for political office. Every voter has their own reasons for casting their vote, but the process itself is objective because it's a, you know, it's whoever wins, it's whoever gets the most votes. Now, I would be interested to see the years when we had co-Mr. Basketballs, if there were exact ties. you know, we thought maybe when Odin and Conley were together that they would get co-Mr. Basketball. I was like, nope, Greg won.
No.
But they were undefeated in the games that he missed. Where when Conley was out, they lost games. See, that would have been a podcast. That could have been a podcast topic.
I'm disappointed in you, Jim. Jeez, you got the hot take. No, that someone from outside of Central Indiana is gonna win Mr. Basketball. We claim Marcus Burton. We stuck the flag in the ground in December, and we're voting for Zane Dowdy. Jeez, well,
it's all right. Hey, it's okay. It's all right. Thought he earned it.
He was. I thought he should have been second. I love Zane. He was the most productive player, you know, quote unquote best player on the best team. And you look at their head to head matchup with Cathedral, and you know, it wasn't really close, you know,
he was the better player both times.
Yeah. So same with Booker, man. I don't have anything against Booker either. You know,
my fault. I thought you said matchup. Did you mean Dowdy and Booker the first time, or did you mean the game with Penn? Okay.
No, I was talking Dowdy and Booker both times. You know, Dowdy got the best of them both times. Obviously, Ben Davis won both times. But I was just saying, I don't have anything against Booker either, man. I think he's potential-wise, he's got the most potential, being 6'11" and long and can, you know, skilled and things like that. But I just thought Dowdy should have got second, you know, just with the season they had and how good he was, how much he meant to that team, and how well he performed on the biggest stage, you know, in the state finals games. And then, like I said, his matchups against Booker as well, another high major big. So I don't know. I thought Zane deserved to get second, but
it is what it is. It's that's deserve, should. Those words are tough again when you have the process the way it is. I mean, but then I flip it pretty quickly to how are you voting for people who barely finished 500? That's a shot across the bow at those who voted for Colvin and Jones. And you know, to me, winning, there is no set criteria for the award, and that's fine. And I would expect people in their circle to vote for them. But I'm not sure how anybody else could. I guess somebody could vote for Colvin because they want the Purdue guy to win, or maybe there's a group. Maybe Mason Jones pulled some votes from the Muncie area. I don't know. I mean, he only had three, so I'm sure Coleman voted for him and should have. I mean, it's his kid. You know, I'll be anxious to see. I'd like to see who the other eight players are that just got one vote.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Anxious, probably too strong of a word, but
that information's out there, just not available to the public.
That text did not get answered. That text did not get answered. Well, let me check something else out here too.
That list would probably be longer than if everyone would have voted.
I probably could have gotten it if I would have followed up on a different direction. But I don't know that it would be in time to record tonight. And I mean, maybe if we get it and it comes up next week, we can throw it in there, but I don't think we're having an emergency pod for
We would have Wednesday or whenever. Yeah, Wednesday.
Burton hadn't won, we would have had an emergency pod. But yeah, it wasn't even close. We do need to teach those young guys how to handle most figuring out that you got beat. Show them the Oscars with how excited the losers are for losing.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Not even a pat in the back, man. Just polite claps. Ah, they're right. Teenagers. Who cares? I'm just playing, but. Because who brought it up? Who brought it up?
No, I think it was Zach did.
Zach, yeah.
Yeah.
Come on, man. Pat him on the back.
He said no dap or nothing.
Nothing. Not even a bro hug. All right. Who looked good this week for Indy Heat?
I'll start with the 15s. I've seen most of those kids play, but I guess the one I hadn't really seen actually is Braylon Langley from Wrights, Evansville
Yeah.
Wrights. I actually did see him play now that I think about it last year at Charlie Hughes, but I didn't really get a good look at him. I mean, he didn't really do much. I think I asked you about him earlier in the week thinking that, you know, I didn't know really what he did, but I definitely saw it this weekend, right? He's super active, long, left-hander, on the boards. He hit a three, had a couple transition dunks, alley-oop. So he's got the athleticism. He's plays really hard. He's long. He looks like he's pretty skilled, being about 6'7" or so, 6'6", 6'7",
Mm-hmm.
somewhere in that range. So he did good. With both teams, 17s and the 15s, man, that first game was rough, especially for the 15s. It was like the guys were getting to where they needed to get to, and they just could not finish. I don't know if it was just, you know, trying to figure out the roles on the team. College coaches are there, playing in the EYBL, you know, level. What it was, but I mean, it definitely progressed and got a lot better as the weekend went on. But that first game, especially for the 15s, was, man, it was rough. His shots were not falling for him.
You get rushed.
Yeah.
Plus, you got to get used to that damn ball. Those shoe company basketballs are terrible. They have no feel to them. And a large part, that's why you get them. You get them and you practice with them. But then when you get to the venue, you play with a new basketball.
Right.
So it's just, and especially with shooters that rely heavily on repetition and feel. And I mean, I remember playing in Kansas City with the very first Under Armour event we were in. And I mean, Sean McDermott couldn't throw it in the ocean if he was sitting in a boat first game, you know, and we played Atlanta Express, which 2 7-footers, and it was a competitive game. We lost by three. And couldn't have shot it any worse than what we did that game. And I don't think we specifically shot the ball very well the whole weekend. But last year, too, the NY2LA stuff, the first 2 weeks playing with new basketballs, and we didn't hit anything in May or anything in April. It was terrible. So you've
right.
got to, you and so, but I mean, obviously, they're a good player. You know, they're really, you know, there's guys out there hitting shots.
Right.
But
yeah,
I saw part of a game today where Catchings got caught fire and hit what, three in a row or?
Yeah. Yeah. He was, he had a couple moments where he was hitting his shots. It just seems like with both teams I watch all weekend, it's just kind of figuring out roles. You know, at the start, it's like everyone thinks they're the number one guy type of thing. And, you know, rotations, it's like you can see kind of guys getting subbed out and it's like, wait, what? Like, I'm coming out already type of thing.
Yeah.
You know, coming off the high school season where they're playing probably the whole game or most of the game, a lot of minutes, definitely not coming out within the first couple minutes type of stuff. So I think it was just getting used to, you know, playing on the, AAU, transitioning from high school, figuring out roles. But yeah, Langley kind of stuck out for the 15s. And then DeJon Hall played really well.
Yeah.
He was getting downhill like normal, but he was also showed the ability to hit some shots. He hit a couple threes when I was watching. He pulled up and hit a couple jumpers, made some plays for teammates. So he played well. And then Brendan Miller as well from Lawrence North. I guess DeJon Hall is a freshman, 2026, rising sophomore at Tinley.
Yep.
And then Brendan Miller, Lawrence North, 6'6" forward. He was, man, he was one of them that first day that was just getting right at the rim, and he just could not finish. But then as the weekend went on, that one game I watched, I can't remember which game, but he was catching in the middle of the zone. And I think it was their third game, that the game that they won, he was just catching in the middle of that zone facing up, and hit a jumper and then made a really nice move where he one dribble left, spun right to the rim and finished. And then he was finding guys as well out of the middle. That's kind of a skill to catch right in the middle of that zone, face up and be able to play.
Yeah, I was getting ready to say that because I remember putting a team with KJ Walton, Brownsburg, and then Missouri. And before transferring to Ball State, he was not good there. He admittedly was not good there. He didn't like being in the middle of a zone.
Yeah.
And so we put Jordan Geist in the middle of it, and he was spectacular. And I think if you can play, I think if you can get your body low, if you the lower you play to the ground, the better. Not necessarily in terms of how far, like, because obviously big guys can do that too. So I'm not saying that's just for little guys, but the lower you can play to the ground in your own gravity, the better you are at making plays, because you are able to play, you're able to move quickly in small places, or in small spaces, excuse me, in small spaces, make quick decisions, and have a base where you're strong enough and able enough to go, and able to go different directions and make plays. And Walton struggled in it. Jordan Geist didn't. And, you know, there were times when, you know, again, AAU team, you pick your roster. I mean, teams would go zone. We would take Walton out because I could put Geist in the middle and play in Ringo and Darian Ringo from Brownsburg, KJ's teammate, and McDermott, and, you know, probably have some other shooter on the floor and at least one big, whether it be, you know, Kessinger or Smits, Bronson Kessinger, Derek Smits. I mean, just go a lot of different ways with that. And you're right. The first weekend, and that's why we play that first. That's why we try to play before we play an open event, because you get guys that do get a feel for their role.
Right.
But I'm also, and I'm the first to admit, and I say it often, I'm a motion snob. So I don't have an offense where it's just wrapped around one or two dudes. You know, I watched that Indy Heat 17-year-old game, and I'm not being critical because, you know, it's just different strokes. Plus, they are playing with a shot clock at the EYBL stuff. We played with a shot clock at Under Armour. We were still able to run, get good stuff out of our motion. But they ran the same double high ball screen, what, 10 possessions in a row? Almost, I mean, it was every possession. I didn't see a possession, a set possession where they didn't run the same thing.
Yeah.
And at some point that just gets easier to defend. And really you're just relying on talent at that point.
They did run a couple other actions. Later, probably by the second, third game, they were trying to get Harrelson isolated in the post where they'd have him handle, you know, start the offense and eventually come off a back screen right to the post and try to post up his guy and score, which worked a few times. But, yeah, mostly, like you said, they did run that double high screen a lot. And not a ton of sets or anything like that or a motion offense, but yeah, they had a couple games they should have won. You know, the game today against the family, they could have won that one. They lost by one. And against Oakland Soldiers, the evening game yesterday, Saturday night, they were up in that one as well. So they really easily could have went 3-1, but they went 1-3 this weekend. So got to bounce back next week.
The Soldiers, the second half of the Soldiers game was the game I saw. Just the second half.
Yeah.
But they were down in that. They were down pretty big in that game, though, at one point.
Was that the game that?
They were down 11. That was the game catching. Because they were down.
Thinking about a different one, man.
They were down. They were down. They did take a lead because they were down 7 and catching went crazy.
Yeah.
And then they were up. That. And then it was back and forth. And I think a 24-second clock is too short. I like 30.
That is pretty quick, man. 24.
I like 30 a lot. I like 30 a lot. I don't buy the theory that these guys are learning how to play with a shot clock, because some of the other stuff I was watching, nobody's playing like nobody's. They're not learning anything. The only thing they're learning is maybe to have, I don't know, an internal clock in their head where they're doing one thing, one possession, or one set at a time. That's not teaching kids how to play with a shot clock. That's teaching kids how to run a set play. And either you get the result you want or you don't. You know, I no longer buy that theory that you play with a shot clock at a lower level because it teaches you how to play. No, not really. Not if that's what we're watching. I watched parts of other games, and it was a lot of the same stuff. Just teams have one thing they run. That's it.
Right.
But that's the function of when you have limited practice or really don't practice at all. You know, you have one weekend where you practice and that's it. Some guys don't function well in that, and they get a little jittery. That's where you know they try to find their role. I don't know how you feel like you can get better if you're not competing for your playing time. But the stuff I saw this weekend, Xavier Robinson, thought he looked awfully good the game I watched. I love that he is. Unfortunately, a couple of games, or the big game they played against New Pal, he was hurt. I didn't know that I don't know that I saw Allen a whole lot this past year. Probably could have gone just enough to see for the Robinson and Brennan Miller piece, right?
Yeah, I was able to catch them once this year.
The game I saw against New Pal during the year, Xavier was hurt, and Kobe Bowles struggled in the first half, partly with foul trouble. And Miles Baker kind of saved their bacon. And then when Bowles and Baker played together, then that's when they took control of the game against New Pal. So getting to watch Xavier, just he plays with more understanding of pace. You know, he's not just like he's a shot out of a cannon. He understands change of speeds. He understands change of direction. The change of speed stuff, especially in traffic, is new based on when I last really took a good hard look at him. He was, you know, he's got nice length. He's explosive. But he, you know, so he can finish. If he can get a guy on his hip, he's going to be able to finish at the basket. But really impressed with his understanding of how to manage a possession, how to be, again, I'm going to use the word patient, but it's, you know, it's all within a split second. But the changing of pace in traffic, just keeping his defender at a disadvantage, and then just the ability to burst and be quick all of a sudden. He's, you know, he's rounding into, basically he's separating himself from the rest of that pack from a point guard position. I don't even know that it's, I'd love to click on our website and see who we got in the ballpark as far as point guards go. But as far as sophomore point guards, he's starting to separate himself from all the rest.
I agree with that. I think he's definitely in the conversation for that number three guy in the class overall.
And you talk about a kid that can finish through contact. You said earlier struggle, and I realize maybe the competition maybe not as big, but these 2025 George Hill kids are playing up.
Yeah.
And Jamin Townsend, man, is just got a lot of physical tools. Really impressed with him during the year, even though Marion got their butts kicked by Anderson. But Townsend just has no problem whatsoever finishing around the basket. Now, how he does against Division I size, especially waiting for him at the rim, which is kind of that kind of that Marcus Burton, Zane Doughty thing where Marcus, we've talked before, where Marcus could get to his spot even against the Ben Davis guards. But right. then there's Zane waiting for him. You know, that's Townsend. He's 6'6", sophomore. He's strong. He looks almost like a senior. You know, and you hope as he gets stronger, he's able to maintain his touch because he's got 3-point range. I loved him in the first half against Anderson. The second half, the wheels came off, but and he was the only one that could sustain any sort of level of control and success. But the rest of it was just utter chaos. And I think Damian King from Anderson has a chance to be pretty good too. He gets to where he needs to be, but then he struggles to finish. Again, at least this past weekend. You know, a lot of that is just taking contact and being able to play through it and put the ball at the glass with a little bit of control. And then one more guy, Evan Hayward is really he's got a lot of things going for him right now. He can score in just a little bit every way possible. He flat out is one of the best shooters off the dribble in the class, the senior class or incoming seniors. And he had a hop back three in traffic. I mean, it was almost kind of like a heat check situation. Hit it, no problem. Just super impressed with how he's rounding out and improving it. I mean, he's trying to think. I'm looking here at the evaluation I've got. Playmaking for teammates, penetrating, getting to the basket or getting to the paint, finding people. And they don't really have any big. So everything he does is kind of a kick out in that situation. Team he's with, they don't really have a big. But he's hitting contested shots. He's doing a lot of things that he's just checking things off the list of things you need to prove you can do to play at the Division I level. And he doesn't take bad shots. I mean, that hop back was as close as, I mean, I don't know. I'm a big believer in getting separation any way you can. And if you've got the legs to get into a hop back off the dribble, I mean, I've coached a number of kids who can do it. And it's a special skill, and it's what you talk about. You talk about stop percentages and things like that when you have workouts. You know what's your stop speed? How quickly can you decelerate and get into a different direction from the direction that you're going? And I'm not just talking about laterally. I'm talking about can you get back and create separation while still having control of your feet, still having control of your body. And that hop back was outstanding. You know, I don't know that it was against maybe a D1 caliber defender, but it was definitely against a quick defender. I don't remember who it was against, but the team they played had some quickness.
Who's he playing with?
He's with Progeny 2020. They're 24.
Right. I did see some highlights on him this weekend. Yeah. He's from Brebeuf, right?
Mm-hmm.
I believe so. Yeah. With Brebeuf. But yeah, it looked like he can shoot it, and it looked like he was he's got some athleticism as well.
Nice. He had one nice dunk, kind of in traffic. I don't know. Did he make the junior all-star team? I don't even know that I paid attention to who made it.
I don't believe so.
Hold on. I mean, he's starting to climb up in there. In terms of, here's the 2023 Junior All-Star. He's starting to climb up in there. Wait. Here we go. He's starting to climb up in there as far as best players in the class. I mean, yeah, it's not even close compared to who's on this list. He should be on the junior all-star team. You know, the Brebeuf plays games a little bit lower scoring, so maybe some of his possessions aren't there. There might not be enough possessions for him to And it might not be enough possessions for him to put up, rack up huge numbers at Brebeuf. But yeah, I'm looking at this. There's no question. There's some evaluation that might need to be reconsidered here in some of this stuff. In my opinion. I think he's a definite D1 kid. On a good team. Again, Brebeuf, they won games this year.
They got guys coming back. Obviously him, but
they got everybody coming back.
Okay.
They lose Macaluso. That's it. Now he scored more as the year went on. And he's a big time glue guy. He's a big time motor guy. Not the most athletic kid in the world. He would have been a Zionsville kid, I think. Pretty sure. If he didn't go to Brebeuf. But that's the only one they lose. They got everybody back. The JV team was decent. I mean, Brebeuf almost every year is going to be one of the top 10 to 15 teams in 3A. It's just a question of getting over the hump. I can't remember who beat them this year. Let me check real quick. Buff Jesuit, who beat them this year in tournament play?
Sectional, wasn't it?
They lost to Garen Catholic. Okay, well, there you go. It's not a horrible loss.
Is that the sectional?
It was, yes, absolutely. Yeah. It's a good sectional. That's Brebeuf, Garen Catholic, Heritage Christian, Chatard, Heron, and Shortridge. Heron's the only school there that I won't ever really be super competitive. But anybody else stand out this week worth talking about? I mean, from Indiana at least.
Right.
The games you watched. I mean, Sisley had a rough first game, but then he bounced back and had a couple of good ones.
Yeah, he played really well, especially today against the family. He was really active on the boards. He was like 6 for 6 from the field. Made some nice passes. Micah Davis, actually, he played well off the bench. He had a couple games where he had 14 in a game, maybe 12 in another. He played pretty well for him off the bench. And Sisley comes off the bench as well for Indy Heat. And not obviously, Harrelson was really good. He just does everything for him, right? You know, a lot of assists. I think he's at the end of the first session, I think he's top 5 in assists in the league, in the entire 17U group. I think I was looking at this at the stats, man. He's his shot attempts, and I think some of that is skewed with the one game where he shot what 16 free throws.
Yeah, that's
what,
a,
16,
yeah, I was 16, go there.
Mm-hmm. 16 for 16 from the line. He went that game, so that, a lot of that skewed. But right now he's second to last in shot attempts on the team.
Mm-hmm.
Like Micah Davis shot the ball 22 times, and Harrelson's only shot 19 times in 4 games. Which, like I said, I believe all these everything's up to date because all the team stats are here for all 4 games they played. Individual stats are as well, so I'll assume this is correct. But we also had some issues with the EYBL stat keeping there. Definitely was off on some of these kids. So this could be off a little bit, but I did think he could have tried to take over a little bit more. And, you know, maybe that's not 100%, you know, where he's at right now. He's got a lot of talent on his team. He found the guys. He defended at a high level. He pretty much did everything. You know, he shot 81% from the free throw line. He shot 32 free throws in 4 games, 26 for 32. So, yeah, he was obviously really good, as you know, per usual.
I don't think he's best with the ball.
Yeah.
I think he's better when he's 50-50. I mean, and I know at Fisher's he's got to handle the ball a ton. And obviously, it's probably something that he likes being a primary ball handler, and he's good enough to do it. But I think he's a much more effective player when he is 50-50 off the ball, on the ball.
Yeah, I like that.
Or where you're moving him in space. And it's not to say that I wouldn't have him be a primary ball handler. And I'm talking about in the summer. But I would do things immediately to get rid of the ball, to get him off of screens. Because I've visions of him being able to hit. Again, you're playing teams that don't necessarily scout and certainly don't game plan. But seeing him get an early flare, or seeing him, you talked about him coming off a back screen into a post up. That's one thing. How about an early flare where he's a very good shooter when he's stationary? Much better right now as a stationary from the 3-point on a stationary catch from the 3-point line than he is, maybe coming off a down screen where he is worried about long pivot, short pivot, things like that. Those are harder shots. When you get a flare screen, you're catching the ball, you're pretty much catching the ball square to the basket already. Or at least you should be, if you're taught correctly. And then, of course, anything he can do, if he could get a screen and curl at his size, at his length, at his ability to finish, he would just be deadly. And I think there's a lot of that he does, a lot of those opportunities he doesn't get from what I saw this weekend. It was just one half. It was just one half, though. So you talk about the back screen he got into a post up. I never saw that. So if that's an adjustment, if that's something they put in, or something they adjusted to, then that's to me, that would be better. I think he's more effective when he's 50-50, and he certainly is that way with Fishers, except for the game against Zionsville, when he and Iams, it just seemed like both coaches were like, "All right, you two dudes, just go at it." It's kind of fun. Iams got the better of him that game, but it was fun because we got kind of what we wanted. Just everybody get out of the way. We're going to play 1-on-1. All right, man. Anything else?
I was just gonna say something about catching Squick. He's Man, if he's a shot maker like that, which he is, that really kind of just, that's huge for him. I think that just watching games this week, like shot making, obviously, is huge. Like if you can just knock down shots from anywhere, it's just and be efficient. It's just, man, it's huge because there's a lot of missed shots, especially early in the weekend on Friday. But catching his percentages don't look great from this weekend, but man, he can really get it going. He can hit shots in the perimeter at 6'7", 6'8". He definitely had stretches where he was really good. I think he shot it 45 times this weekend compared to Harrelson's 19. Something seems off there, but
Again, I think the free throw thing you're talking about. I mean, if you're not getting and ones, those free throws soak up your field goal attempts.
That could be for sure. That is definitely the case with Harrelson, but
I mean, at least when I watched Catchy shot the ball well. But again, I've seen really good shooters not do well, especially the first weekend. The first
he
weekend.
gets a shot off though. Like he gets into his shot and he can shoot contested shots as well. He's not yeah he's definitely got the confidence to get him up.
All right, last topic. We said where Zach was over the weekend. We did not say where Kyler was. Kyler was in Nash Vegas over the weekend, not able to join us because he's recovering, but he's working. I do trust that he's working. Not that anybody's required to be here, but at all in the least. But he is had to push his work to this evening to get settled. We got to come up with some ideas on what he did while he was in Nash Vegas.
He was in I think I missed some of this conversation
We should
earlier today in the Slack, but
get our audience, not that it's overwhelmingly huge audience, to tweet at Courtside IND what Kyler Staley did in Nash Vegas, but wrong answers only. Just whatever you want. The four people who listen.
yeah.
It's probably more than four, but a little more than four. It's like seven. No, it's more than
Yeah.
that. It's more than that. But I don't know, I'd be anxious if we get some wrong answers only. What did Kyler Staley do in Nash Vegas this weekend?
A feeling
Again,
Zane's dad's got to have a nice
yeah,
suggestion.
again, wrong answers only at Courtside IND at our Twitter. We want creative wrong answers only. What did Kyler Staley do while he was in Nash Vegas? I don't know. The difference between what Nashville and Indy's, what, just more country music bands?
I've never been to Nashville, so I couldn't tell you. But it seems
We
that way.
need to do a weekend. We go down to Rathskeller, hang out, listen to some good cover bands. It's what we do down here when it's warm.
Cover bands?
Well, cover bands that play music of other people. So not real bands. I mean, they're talented, but they're not making their own music.
Oh. I don't know about, I'm not into that, all the cover bands and all that type of music.
You're not? Oh man, it's good stuff.
No, I'm not.
Do we need to go listen to Steve Isaac's band? The Grace Scott band? Steve Isaacs is a freshman coach at Logansport. His son Blake was a helped us a couple years when he was in there at Logansport in the summers. And Steve's a good basketball guy. I think he listens every week. He's in a band like that actually plays their own music. I'm sure they do some cover stuff, but you don't like cover bands?
Oh no, man, I
First
couldn't.
of all, they're free. If you're not huge in the music like me,
Could.
the free part's really nice. But
Couldn't tell you a thing about it, Jim. Couldn't tell you.
no, all right. Well, teach you some things. You get older, you'll like cover bands. Because most of them play the music of your younger days. Even though I'm not one of those guys that hangs on to his own music. I like current stuff as much as I like the old stuff. All right, man. Anything else? I think we covered kind of what we were going to talk about this week.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Cool. All right. Well, don't forget, everybody, send us your wrong answers only on what Kyler did while he was in Nash Vegas this past weekend. Zach, hope you're enjoying your soccer. God bless you for doing that. Dominique, hope you have a good week. You're gonna watch some more streams this week.
Yeah, I'll be on there Friday through Sunday again, and then Run and Slam the following weekend. I'll be in person there. So,
Yep, we'll be. Well, I think we're all gonna be at Run and Slam.
yep.
Got the Airbnb lined up. We're good to go.
Nice.
And yeah, not bad. And then let me know if there's a team stream for Adidas next week.
Team stream. Okay, I'll let you
Team
know.
stream, not a court stream, but
Not
a
court. Right.
team
Team
stream.
stream. Cool.
Maybe we can figure that out if it's not ridiculous.
Cool.
But don't watch the 15-year-old team because they only have one,
Yeah.
the Gary West elite,
Barely one guy.
the
Yeah,
barely
yeah,
yeah, the
yeah.
one guy, yeah, the one guy on the team practically lives in Illinois. So,
Yeah.
oh well, it is what it is. We got a weird group of classes coming through here. Although I'm liking 2025 more and more. Starting to find some guys that I think are pretty decent.
Yeah.
Kyler's buddy, Cole Henry, Poppy Rivera, both, and Josh Renfro can play, man.
Was that Christian Academy?
Yeah, he can play. You know, I was wondering. His brother, Braden, is the ERA sports guy that does all the video stuff. He does a good job. I know Josh has some good numbers, but yeah, he's pretty good. He can score. He can get it up. And handles the ball too good. Handles the ball too well against traffic.
Nice.
I'm starting to like 2025 a little bit more than what I did at the beginning. But that's what it's all about. Finding guys, kids developing. And then they get, you know, as they get older, start to get recruited. Might be a little deeper than what we thought. 2026, I'm worried about.
Yeah.
All right, man. Appreciate it. Have a good week.
We'll see you.